5 years after the Mexican-American studies ban in TUSD, a legal victory tonight for those who fought to restore the program.
A federal judge has ruled racism was the basis for state superintendents getting a state law that compelled the district to eliminate all classes, curriculum, and course material.
Is teaching Mexican-American studies in public school un-American? A federal judge has ruled no. We go to Tucson, Arizona next to meet the teachers.
My name is Jose Gonzalez, and I am born and raised in Tucson, Arizona, and I've been teaching the past 25 years.
I'm Curtis Acosta. I was born in Mountain View, California, in the South Bay Area, and I moved here to Tucson about 20-odd years ago. I started teaching right after that.
In Tucson, Arizona, Jose Gonzalez and Curtis Acosta are known to a lot of people as the teachers who helped start a successful Mexican-American studies program for Latino public school students, and also as subjects in a documentary about the program, Precious Knowledge. Now, the Mexican-American studies program came under attack in the mid-2000s when Arizona's school superintendent called it un-American. He also said it promoted the overthrow of the U.S. government. In 2012, the Arizona state government forced the school district to cut the program. Now, 5 years later, a federal judge has ruled the ban unconstitutional and said it was motivated by race-based fear. Steve Paulson sat down with Jose Gonzalez and Curtis Acosta to talk about the program they helped start and why they began teaching it in the first place.
My father is a avid reader and loves history. And, you know, my parents come from Mexico. I'm a first generation Mexican-American. And so he would often share stories, you know, when we were driving to Mexico about the name of the rivers and mountains that indigenous people, the Otam, called them and give us stories. So I was always fascinated and love history. My junior year at Choya High School, I had a teacher, Mr. Johnson, and he was a great coach, you know, but he was an awful teacher. This guy would read to us, you know, Mr. Johnson would read to us. And I remember, you know, I raised my hand one day and I asked him, you know, Mr. Johnson, you know, we can read, because he would sit and read to us. And obviously we'd all fall asleep. And that was his classroom management. I look at that as, you know, as educational malpractice. And that was one of my motivating pieces to become a history teacher and a political science teacher as well.
So, Curtis, what about you? Yeah. Were there any personal experiences for you that led you to want to teach these kind of classes?
You know, very similar, actually, to Jose's story. I grew up in the Bay Area. It was, you know, it's always had a reputation of being a progressive part of the United States. And that's not the real history. You know, I'm biracial. My parents met and fell in love in high school, and my dad's Chicano, and my mom's of European descent. And so my experiences were of erasure. You know, my Chicano side, my dad's side of the family was non-existent as far as in schools.
I recall my grandmother telling me a long time ago when she knew I was going to become a teacher, and she's from Mexico, and she said to me in Spanish, she said, "Mijo, you want to work with kids? That's beautiful. You have to first touch their heart in order to work with their minds." And so when I entered the classroom, there was racialized trauma that I endured from teachers through my K-12 setting. And
give me an example of that. What was racialized trauma?
Racialized trauma is in third grade. This woman, she was a nun, and her name was Sister Claudia, and she was mean. And so Sister Claudia had thought I had been talking while we were reading silently. And so she called me up to the board and started asking me to spell these words that she had just given us. And so she was making an example of me. And so she was just like badgering me, you know, "How do you spell this word, you know?" And I'm thinking, you just gave them to us. And so I have my eyes down, and everyone's looking, no one's saying anything. And then I yelled to her, I said, "This isn't right." And I walked out. And so as such, we had lived experiences that other people may not, and we drew from those. And so in how we interacted, you know, we were culturally relevant before culturally relevant was popular. You know,
so how did you do that in the classroom then? I mean, what was your mission there in the classroom?
Well, I'll give an example, a concrete example, because it fits really with what Jose is saying about his experiences. So every year we would read in my literature class, because I taught literature, Jose taught social studies. In my literature class, we'd read Indian Education by Sherman Alexie. And it's a short story that he wrote. He's brilliant. And so we would read Indian Education almost like within the first 2 weeks of school, because he writes vignettes from first grade through graduation. He has this exact example that Jose was talking about, being spotlighted, or, you know, that's the word we use in teaching. When you're unfair to a certain student, you put them on spot, right? And so our students would read this or hear a story like Jose's, and they would immediately be able to engage with it. So every year, within a week, my students were writing reflections about the discrimination that they'd already been through. And that wasn't the prompt. The prompt was, when have you felt like disengaged from school? When have you felt similar to the character, right? And they would go there. So that shows a couple of things. Number one, we were able to build trust right away. So our students were able to recognize within the first 2 weeks of school in our classes that this was a different space. So it's not just about being liked, it's about being loved. And when you're being loved, you have high expectations, and also you're going to have, you know, a discipline. You know, a lot of times you'll hear from a former Attorney General Horn, and like, our students came to us as blank slates, that they didn't have these experiences and they couldn't make these connections, and that we put these ideas in their head. That's ludicrous.
With ethnic studies, there's a desire to develop ethnic solidarity. You know, this group, we're the Latinos, that other group, they're the African-Americans, that other group, they're the Asian-Americans, the other group, they're the Anglos, and so on. In the human being, there is a primitive part that is tribal, and that will say, you know, I want to be with members of my own tribe, members of my own race, and that sort of thing. And the function of civilization and the function of our public school system is to get people to transcend that. There are better ways to get students to perform academically and to want to go into college than to try to infuse them with racial ideas.
So do you think you don't think they're doing anything right then?
I really don't. No, I think they should be abolished.
So how did your students respond to these classes?
Well, teaching is love, and that's not taught in colleges of education. And so in love, as Curtis stated, you know, it's a familial love, a parental love. And so students love being in these spaces.
You know, high school can be incredibly alienating. It can be an incredibly dangerous space and not a safe space for students because of cliques, because of bullying, because of those things. And our classrooms were the opposite of that. They were antithetical to that. They were free spaces, open spaces. And that was because we were helping them and giving them time and space to develop who they were and who they wanted to be. And that was the key to an academic identity being built.
So let me ask about the criticisms that were leveled against your ethnic studies program. You know, you came under attack. The state superintendent of schools back then said these programs were divisive because they separated people into different ethnic and racial groups. They said your classes were un-American. They promoted resentment against white people. How do you respond to those charges?
Unfortunately, I think a lot of the folks that heard about us, they were inspired from fear and losing control of a single narrative that is not really the narrative of this country.
What were they fearful of, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, we're all living in 2017, so it's, you know, we were the United States here in Arizona before the United States turned into Arizona. So, you know, you see it with the border wall. We live here in Arizona. We're 60 miles from the frontera, the border. We have heard this rhetoric for not only generations, but it's intensified over the last 20 years.
Mr. Chairman, what's being done down here in Tucson Unified School District is teaching of hate speech, sedition, anti-American. If people want to pay for that on their own dime in their homes, they can be as anti-American as they want. But they won't use my tax dollars to do it.
To answer your question, it doesn't teach us to be anti-American. It teaches us to embrace America, all of its flaws and all. But certain things like racism and certain things like oppression, they do exist. And we go for these classes first off from hearsay, because people that have graduated and gone to these classes have said nothing but positive things. They figured out who they really are as human beings. They figured out how to handle situations to their best abilities. So the word anti-American isn't even relevant in our classes.
So Jose, how do you respond to that charge that these classes were un-American? Or another way of putting it is that when you were teaching history, you were teaching the bad stuff about history, not the successes of the founding fathers and, you know, the other great pieces of American history.
I laugh. At one point, it was funny, but it became very serious. Our students were traumatized by this We were accused of overthrowing the United States government as the first prong. Second prong was creating resentment, in other words, reverse racism, if you will. And the third one was these classes were specifically designed for a single group. And the fourth was creating ethnic chauvinism. And so how does a person just kind of come to grips with this, you know, this idea that somewhere in Arizona and around the United States, people actually think that a core teachers were teaching the overthrow of the United States government?
The fear is you're breaking away from those traditions that we know resulted in freedom, that we know resulted in prosperity. There's a real fear when we see books like The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. That's Marxist, Leninist, collectivist. And that's part of the fear that, people have about the kind of studies.
But the civil rights movement was something that everybody was afraid of, right?
Well, some were. Some other people...
Most people were afraid of that.
Yeah. I think there was concern. It's legitimate to say there was concern.
A lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What it's about is the American culture has an outline for every single one of us. And that is an oppression. It is an oppression on all of us.
Just stereotypes and people that, you know, see me, the way I dress, the way I look. And I started believing that, you know. I started thinking, you know, I'm a Chicana, I ain't gonna be able to graduate, I'm gonna have kids young, I'm a, you know, like that. And then I started coming to these classes and I started seeing, like, why am I believing all this? Instead of believing it, I should change it.
But when I look up at the wall and I see a poster of Che Guevara, who many of us think was a thug, and I don't see anything on Benjamin Franklin, I have a problem.
So the ethnic studies program was banned by the Arizona State Legislature. Was that back in 2010? What year was that?
The law passed in 2010, and just to be clear, ethnic studies wasn't ended. The only program that was shut down was ours, which was Mexican-American studies, and the program was shut down in January of 2012.
So what impact did that have on, personally, on the two of you?
Well, it's had a tremendous amount of impact, and so even to this day, here in Tucson Unified, you know, I'm having a hard time finding employment and moving up. There are people who really do think that we taught the overthrow of the United States government and so think that we're bad apples. But ultimately, how it's impacted me is my students crying and asking me, begging me to teach the curriculum that I was teaching them before. That is something that's seared in my mind and heart, and it's something I haven't reconciled with yet. I'm still very angry. I ran into one of the board members, and he tried to shake my hand, and I need to forgive him, but I'm just not there.
Yeah. Curtis, what about you? What was the impact on the banning of this program for you personally?
Well, I left TUSD after a year of trying what Jose still lives every day.
You left being a teacher because you were so upset at what happened?
Well, I didn't leave being a teacher. But you left
the Tucson Public Schools.
I did. I was, the entire time we were going through our civil rights struggle here, I was also getting my PhD. But I did a year of what Jose is talking about, being banned. It was like being a doctor and having the drugs that can help heal people, like the penicillin, in your cabinets, but you can't dispense it. I mean, I want you to think about that. That's how dehumanizing that year was for me. So I left, and now I'm a professor here at the University of Arizona South.
Now, it seems to me there is a big irony in this whole story. I mean, after the ban of your Mexican-American studies program in Arizona, a lot of other states, when they heard about this, when they heard about what you'd done, I mean, from California to Texas, have actually started their own Mexican-American studies programs because they heard about the success of yours. How do you explain that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, how that just took off. And I had a friend, I was in San Diego, Dr. Garcia Sims, and she shared with me in 2010, before all this happened, she says, you know, Jose, you may not be ready to hear this, but you all with Mexican American studies, you're all martyrs. And what you're going to see is you're going to see all these Mexican American studies programs develop all across the United States. And so that's what's happened.
Wow. I mean, that must make you feel weird. I mean, on the one hand, I mean, I guess you've sort of become heroes to some of these people, but martyrs. I mean, that's like, wow. I mean, that's, who wants to be a martyr?
Yeah, you know, and so the conversation, let me just say, was interesting because I didn't sit well with me. But in hindsight, you know, she was right. There's an old Mexican proverb, and it states, it goes something to this effect, and it states that, you know, they thought they buried us. And what they didn't know is that we were the seeds.
Most of the books, you pick up a history book, and you don't really see any other cultures in there but, you know, mostly Caucasian white people.
Ethnic studies is the knowledge of other than your own ethnicity.
Not only learning about the past of the U.S., but also learning and having the opportunity to learn about our cultura.
My grandpa, my grandma taught me to be proud that I'm Mexican. And these classes helped me because I actually know my history now.
For someone that's felt so out of place, it feels good to have a home.
The way things were going, I probably just would have just left school.
Jose Gonzalez and Curtis Acosta helped create and fight for Mexican-American studies in Tucson's public schools. In August, a federal judge ruled that the state's ban on the program was unconstitutional and motivated by race-based fears. Thanks to Ari Palo, the Independent Television Service, and Latino Public Broadcasting for excerpts from their documentary about the program. It's called Precious Knowledge.